Good morning, fellow students, and welcome back to another episode of Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I am Jamie.
I am Drew.
And as always, we are here to help you get into the Legacy format, get better, learn the decks. We are hosted on Gathering Magic and sponsored by CoolStuffInc.com. We have something special going on today. Drew, what do you finally have something special going on today?
No, but we have a guest, though, and he's pretty special.
Is that not special for you?
I mean, I guess.
That was your lead-in. You could have done that.
Oh,
no?
Well,
no. All right. Fail. We have Kenji here on the line. Hello.
Hello. How are you guys?
We're good.
We are doing very well. Now, we are trying to get people better at Legacy, and the one thing we really want to talk about today is Legacy Leagues and the Legacy format on Magic Online. And you know a little bit more about that than us. So why don't you tell the audience about yourself?
Oh, man, that's a wide array of things that I could talk about. All right.
Start with favorite colors. Move on from there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of deep blue. I like long walks on the along the ocean. And okay. I'm sorry. Let's see. Okay, I started playing Magic probably around 16 years ago now, around the Tempest Block era. Nice. I wasn't really playing as much as collecting the cards. My older cousin played and, you know, being the interested younger cousin, the cooler older cousin playing this game, I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I want to try this out. Really didn't start playing until maybe like the Saga region. And then kind of been playing just ever since then. I think I took a quick break during the Kamigawa and Time Spiral eras, but been playing Magic ever since. Started streaming 4 years or so ago now, and you know, everything's just been taking off from there. It's just been climbing new mountains and planting my flag wherever I go.
All right, you are now the guru and the Sherpa, and we will once again be the tourists along for the ride.
Comic relief.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad you played off of that. That was good.
You mentioned about streaming, and we do not want to bog down the entire episode with, you know, step by step what streaming is. That would kind of be a waste of your time. So, to the audience, as in previous interviews, this is a slightly more advanced episode. If you have questions, if we go too fast for anybody, message me directly and I'll help. But without getting too boring about what is streaming?
It is me broadcasting out me playing Magic to other people. So, say you're a big fan of basketball or football, you know, you watch those all the time on ESPN, yada yada yada. I am to that what Magic players would watch, I guess. Does that make sense? Was that
sort of?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
So,
okay.
So you're like, you know, you're like the ESPN of Magic.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. If you watch football on Sundays, you know, and you love to do that because you love football, well, just think of that. For Magic, and I'm the person you would watch for Magic. You know, on Sundays, people tune in, and I'm there, I'm playing Magic, and they can watch, and maybe it's not informative, but it's entertaining.
And so for anybody who doesn't know, the streaming happens on Twitch. We'll include a link to you in particular and your channel on there. A lot of people are on pretty much 24/7. Somebody is on playing Magic. Sometimes I've seen them in paper. Usually it's somebody playing Magic online and just doing a live recording and broadcast of them doing that with a chat in the bottom with the game, usually with a picture of themselves on there so you can, you know, see your facial expressions as you're drafting, so, you know, we can get all excited with you. and it's really a lot of fun. I did it a lot back when I had better internet. I do it a little bit less watching now that I don't have internet, but it's a really good source. So you also then are obviously playing a lot of Magic Online. Tell us just what you think about Magic Online for the people who don't really know what it is. And again, we don't need to bog down with all the super basic stuff because waste of your time. But for folks who haven't played it before and are wanting to get into it, what would you tell them about it?
Sure. Magic Online is just a great, simple, effective, easy way to play Magic, you know, anytime you want to, almost any format that you want to. In addition to that, you know, if you want to draft the newest set, you can do that. They frequently have older sets that you can draft online. Currently, they have Ravnica block drafts online. And, you know, where are you just going to randomly go in paper to play a Ravnica block draft unless somebody has some boxes laying around or for some reason, you know, your FNM decides to do one randomly? You can play Legacy, you can play Vintage, you can play Modern, you can play Commander, you can play anything that your heart desires on Magic Online, just, you know, at the click of a mouse. It is a little bit awkward if you want to play both paper and Magic Online, because there is a very real cost to playing on Magic Online. It's not the same exact, you know, it's not card for card. If you want to build a, for example, Legacy deck online, it's not going to cost the same as much as a Legacy deck in paper, you know, which can be thousands upon thousands of dollars. But there is going to be a monetary amount that you have to spend to get invested to start things off, for sure. It's quick and easy. You know, it's everything you want on Magic.
Okay. Well, that's really great, because that is a thing which I've always appreciated, is being able to play with people I'm not around, especially with me, you know, having a young child. I'm not able to get out to the store hardly ever, despite the fact that I've got a great store 30 minutes away that has something every night. Now, I've done some of the other ways to play the game. I've played on the proxy websites that they have. You know, there's X-Mage and Apprentice and stuff like that. I've played by post, which I don't necessarily recommend, but if you're desperate enough, I've done that. I played the old, what was it, Microprose, Activision, the old video game?
Oh, Chandelar. Yeah.
Chandelar. Yeah. I have a giant Jaguar card somewhere around here from that. An old video game from like 97 with an AI that I remember being pretty good at Magic. I'm not really sure if it was good or if I was just terrible, but this seems like a much better way, much higher level of play, just a good rules enforcement. A lot of the things that people worry about, learning the triggers and everything, you need to know those, but you need to know them to be able to play optimally, not so that they don't happen, because they, unless Magic Online is broken, they happen on their own, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you set your stops. It's really good at teaching you the parts of the game as well, because triggers, you know, they will show up automatically. It's like it's not that you can forget them. It's would you like to do this or not?
Okay. Legacy leagues are happening now, and I don't know whether they will occur once the season's over. But the season's closing in a few weeks, so we wanted to talk to you and talk to the audience now about that, so that anybody interested can feel comfortable and jump in. So tell us, what are Legacy leagues?
So they started to introduce just leagues in general. Legacy was one of the later ones they introduced. And leagues are basically pickup games. You choose a deck. You have to have the cards for that deck. You choose a deck. You enter via either tickets, which are basically the online currency. Tickets are effectively, you know, when one ticket is $1. You can enter with play points, another type of currency, and so on and so forth. But anyways, you choose your deck. You have to have the cards. You enter via play points or tickets, and then at the click of a button, it'll just ask you if you want to join a match or not. And as soon as somebody else joins the Legacy queue, it'll matchmake you up depending on how close your records are, you know, how many other people are searching for players. And you'll just play a match. You do your sideboarding. It's best of three, just like any normal Magic game. But then as soon as you're done with that match, you can step away and be done. So if you only have, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, you can play a match very easily and then walk away. You don't have to commit 3 hours, 4 hours to like a normal tournament that you're used to in paper or anything like that.
That's part of why I've gotten so interested now that I saw leagues, because, you know, the same reason why it's hard for me to leave the house for 5 hours, it's still hard for me to be in front of my computer for 5 hours too. It's just, that's a difficult chunk to pull out. But, you know, as you said, 30 minutes to an hour here or there, that's much more manageable, especially for people who, you know, have careers or families or children or school or something that's going to keep them from being able to play at scheduled times. Typically, Magic Online had followed kind of the normal Magic idea, as I understand it, of having set times and here's a tournament and you play here and everybody plays at the same time. And when they're done, okay, now it's round two for everybody at the same time, which makes sense. But, you know, if you're online, there's not really any reason why you can't play your match at 3 a.m. with somebody else and then play your next match at 5 a.m., just whatever time works best for you. And I guess this is kind of a way to organize that. Do they have leagues for all the different formats?
Currently, let me double check here. They have leagues for Modern, Standard, Legacy, and I believe Pauper. Pauper is an all-common format. And I think they're going to be rolling around some other leagues in the near future, should enough interest be provided. I mean, right now the sealed league, so, you know, the Oath of Gatewatch and Battle for Zendikar, it has almost 5,000 people in it, which is crazy to think about.
That's kind of amazingly huge. Do you know how many people Legacy Leagues has had? Has it been well-received or success as far as you can tell?
Let me see. All right, I'm checking out the Constructed League room right now. Standard has 1,300 players in it. Pauper has 1,000. Modern has 1,000. Legacy has 500. So Legacy by far the lowest number of people in the league. But 500 is still a decent amount. You know, it's not hard to just join the league and find a match. It's going to be a lot quicker than the old version. The old version is, they were called daily events. They were set times. They were four rounds. So maybe legacy events only happened at 1 p.m., 5 p.m., 9 p.m. You'd have to enter one of those tournaments and they would be 4+ hours long, which is why leagues are so much nicer. You know, for legacy, you could just join whenever. And like I said before, an hour or whatever, and you're done for one match.
Yeah, I mean, having half the number might not sound good to everybody, but to me, that sounds great. You know, if you have, think your local FNM, if you've got 40 people show up for that, well, 20 people showing up for Legacy, that's a pretty decent turnout for Legacy. So that's encouraging, especially with it being a new league on Magic Online, and also something which is growing with Eternal Masters. So we've talked about that at length on other episodes about, you know, kind of the growth of Legacy. But that's really encouraging to me to see it being taken to so quickly by everybody. Now, with the leagues, how does the cost really go with the leagues? The entry fee, the payouts, how does that work?
Let me check here. So if you join a league, it requires, I think it's about 6 tickets for just a constructed event. If you want to join like the draft and stuff, it's going to be a little bit more, because again, it's like you're paying for the actual product if you were to do so in paper, right? Okay. Let's see. Go ahead.
So you do pay cash for the cards and for the entry fees, just as if it was real stuff. You say tickets. Each one of those, one ticket is about $1. So a pack costs, what, about 3 tickets?
Yeah, 4 tickets or so, 3.5. It depends. They always fluctuate a little bit.
Yeah. So so entry is, you know, a few bucks to enter. If you bring your own deck, a lot more if you're doing a sealed or a draft or something like that, where you get cards to go. Everything that we're used to in paper Magic. I've heard people say that the payout in Legacy Leagues is flatter than what they see in some of the other leagues. How does that work out?
Let's see. I'm looking at the prizes right now for the Legacy Leagues, and all leagues are five matches long. For Legacy, if you go 3-2, you get your entry fee back. So that's not bad. 3-2 seems very, very reasonable. If you go 4-1, you get a pack in addition to your entry fee, in addition to half of another entry fee. So if you can consistently go 3-2 or better, you know, you're already going to be getting some extra product. If you go 2-3, you get half of entry fee back. So even if you go 2-3 twice, you're getting one entry fee back overall. So that's actually not too bad. I don't know how it compares to like the standard leagues. I can double check this here real quick, but that seems fine.
I've heard it compared to sealed leagues. Apparently sealed leagues is more top heavy, with more prizes lumped for the 4 and 5 wins and few to none for the lower amounts. One thing that I thought was kind of interesting, and you know, Drew here's the mathematician, so he can confirm my math. If you win 0, so if you go 0-5, which is going to happen sometimes in legacy leagues at least, you still get some point prize back, like 1/6 of an entry fee or something like that, which I think that means they could have just made it cheaper and made everybody's prizes cheaper by 10, and it would have turned out the same. Just kind of odd that they did it that way, I guess, for making people feel good about themselves so they can feel encouraged to come back and try again.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you get anything back.
Makes things round numbers too, I guess, but yeah.
True. Yeah, I do like round numbers. I know that higher top-end payouts often lead to at least a feeling of more competitiveness. You know, that if you can win, you know, 10 times your entry fee by winning, and you think you're going to win, you have that confidence, maybe you as the overconfident player would want to play in that one rather than a more flat payout. Do you think that the competitiveness on Legacy Leagues, how would you set that in your mind?
I don't, like, people that want to play Legacy are going to join the Legacy League. It's not that it's going to be more or less competitive. They just want to be able to play at any time. They don't want to be limited by the fact that it used to be, you know, very strict times that you could play Legacy. If people want to play Legacy, they're going to join these leagues and just play it. I think there's going to be a wide range of competitiveness in these leagues.
Yeah, I talked to one person online who was, you know, they were kind of complaining of that you might get somebody who was very competitive and somebody who wasn't. Really, though, that made it sound just like you're going to a GP or something where, you know, maybe the first few rounds you're playing somebody with their homebrew modern deck that they tweaked for Legacy, and then the next round, you know, foiled out Miracles. You know, and you kind of just don't know. And if you do well, you know, when you're in the 4-1 bracket, you're probably going to be playing more competitive people. So he at least, I'll admit, he was unhappy because he wanted something that was more strictly competitive. But it sounds like, you know, at least after the first round or two, you kind of get paired with people as competitive as you are. So you kind of find the right place for your deck and abilities.
Which is what happens at, like, FNM, too, anyway. I mean, you get randomly paired at the beginning, and you may play somebody who's a raw beginner, or you might get paired against, you know, the local shark. And then it's after a couple of rounds that you start playing as people who have records about the same as you. So I feel like this is maybe more supposed to replicate the FNM experience rather than, like, the GP experience.
Yeah, I think so.
That's probably fair. I think I've said it on here before how, you know, just playing standard, I would always go 2-2 at FNMs. And I couldn't figure out why until I realized my local store is Star City Games. And so my deck was, I'm more competent than the random person who showed up, but I'm not really going to beat the person with 4 Jace the Mind Sculptors in their deck, or at least at that point in standard. That was a little beyond my abilities at the time. So that's really a good way to look at it. And that's really what I love about this. I hear a lot of people saying how they're starting up Legacy Nights at their stores, and that's wonderful. But I also hear a lot of people say, you know, we don't have a Legacy scene, or I'm the only person interested, or something like that. And I love that now everybody has a Legacy scene at any time. Now everybody has a local store that has Legacy Night 7 days a week. They have to go to their computer for it, but it's there at least.
My computer is so far away. I don't know.
I mean, all the way across the room. Well, your computer has problems, Drew. We've addressed that already.
It's very true.
You don't even have to interact with people if you don't want to, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah. That's the worst part of everything, right?
Well, also, I mean, my FNM got mad at me when I didn't wear pants. So Magic Online really doesn't seem to care. They had no complaints yet, if you know what I mean. do you have a feel, really? It sounds like every league is going to be kind of wildly different since you're just playing 5 rounds at a time against people, you know, at your level for each round, so to speak. Is there really a metagame that's evolved on Magic Online that would be the same or different as what you might see in paper?
Oh yeah, there's a huge metagame on Magic Online. It's they always post the deck lists a few days or a week afterwards, you know, detailing the decks that did well. It doesn't in any event, you know, 5-0 in a league, or it 4-0'd a daily event, or it won an online PTQ. So people are always checking those things, and you'll see these waves of decks being played, and then decks that hate on those decks. It's really interesting. I mean, for sure, there are times where, say, for example, Eldrazi, you know, at the last Pro Tour, Eldrazi took over. All of a sudden, a ton of Eldrazi decks were showing up online in Modern. So it's very similar. It kind of ebbs and flows with what's happening online, but then it kind of similarly copies whatever the last big tournament was in paper.
Yeah, I'm looking at only a list of kind of the most recent 5-0 decks for Magic Online. Mm-hmm. And so this isn't giving you, you know, the full meta game, because I'm sure there's lots of 4-1 decks that are very good. But I'm seeing lands, burn, reanimator. I don't even know what to call this one. I guess it's a Stoneforge. It's a Stoneblade deck of some sort. So it seems a little bit all over the board. A good bit of Reanimator, and here's a Delver deck. So it seems like it's got a little bit of everything. maybe a little bit more Reanimator as I go down the list, but even then, not too far outside of the norm. Now, one thing which I noticed when I was looking on there, some cards, as you said, it's less expensive overall than getting it in paper. Mm-hmm. Some cards are a lot more expensive. I don't want to completely derail for Magic the Gathering finance or anything. Do you have any advice for our listeners as far as that goes, though, as kind of simple things they should be aware of going in? Like, for example, one advice I've had is never open your packs. You can always, you know, basically use the packs as currency. But also, like, how you would buy into Legacy if you just wanted to start from scratch, or what Legacy decks are maybe cheaper than you'd expect online?
Oh, sure. So a ton of cards are random. Like, say for Caracas example, you know, Legacy... Maybe is it? What do you call it? A staple? Legacy staple? Caracas?
Yeah, we did an episode on legacy staples, and we included it in there. So I think we would.
Yes.
I think we were required by.
Okay, sure.
to
so,
call it
so
that.
So how much is Caracas worth in paper? A few hundred dollars or something?
Like it's
200.
A hundred. Not it's not 200. Well, okay. I don't know. Maybe I haven't looked at prices since the prices have done some weird things since the Eternal Masters. Sure. Announcement. So it wasn't 100. It wasn't 200. But yeah. Anyway, in that range.
Sure. So, but it's not like $5 in paper. You know, it's
no, it's certainly not.
Okay. So online, I think it's probably a ticket, or effectively a dollar or less. You know,
yeah,
it's a dollar and 40 cents.
Yeah, exactly. So you can pick up your Caracas for $1 online. But on the same token, a card like Days, which I think is $4 in paper, give or take.
Yeah.
Is, let me double check right now. I'm gonna say it's upwards of $15 or $20. Yeah. So it like just
I guess,
just in
I guess
like
no
paper,
one wants to no one wants to draft Nemesis. I guess, huh?
Exactly. Just in like paper, it depends on what sets and how available they are online. Cool. So Masks Block, where Days comes from, and some other cards, like Rashad and Port, things like that. Mm-hmm. Those are way inflated because there weren't many of them printed on, or the, you know, they don't have many of those product. They don't have much of that product coming out online. So
it's really odd to me how, you know, they quote unquote print product on Magic Online. Like right now, you know, you can get the current sets, and that's all you can get. But they're also doing a flashback. So if you want to draft, you can do the original Ravnica block. Mm-hmm. And so every day now there's more Shocklands being injected into the marketplace. The reserve list, which we've talked about before, does not apply to Magic Online, which would make sense since the reserve list predated Magic Online. If mm-hmm. the reserve list applied on Magic Online, they could not have made a single dual land. And because of that, they can sort of print any card as much as they want, whenever they want. And they seem to just kind of manage that by figuring out what people want and getting them just a little bit all the time and changing it. And I guess it's that Masks was available for a little while a long time ago and then just hasn't been, right?
Oh, they occasionally bring it back for flashback drafts. It's just, it's mm-hmm. not a good format to draft. People join it because they hadn't done it before, so they just want to try it out. Or people like me, they join it because, well, they like beating on people that don't know how to draft the format and the chance sure. to open some money cards, you know?
Yeah, hey, yeah. Days is a common, right? So
I just double-checked. Days is 27 tickets online right now.
Oh, man.
Okay, here's my hot take. Days is going to be in Eternal Masters because only because they want to inject some on Magic Online. Because if they throw something like Caracas on there for us paper players... Well, that's great, but Magic Online won't care. So, okay, you give us Caracas, we'll give you Days. Everybody will be happy. I fully expect that to happen.
Yeah, I need to sell all of my paper Dayses. I did open a lot of paper Nemesis packs, so yeah, they're not. I mean, they're at $17 in paper, but they're $4 or $5, and yeah, I think that's.
I have a foil Days in paper, which apparently is, you know, 90 plus or something.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, very nice. I do not. I was kind of out then. I don't know. I was in and out like everybody else. But when I was in, I was still only buying a little bit and buying a lot of commons because I didn't know which ones were which. I don't know. It was a weird time.
So has does the prices? I mean, I've heard for example that in modern online, you see an awful lot of burn, or at least this used to be the case, in part because of the availability of cards. And it just, you know, you see a fair amount of burn in modern anyway in paper, but you seem, but I had heard that you saw a disproportionate amount more online. Is there anything like that in Legacy where the availability of cards causes certain decks to be more or less common?
Oh, I think so for sure. Burn is always very, very prevalent online. In fact, Burn was one of the very first Legacy decks that I built a long time ago, just because it was so much cheaper than everything else. Mm-hmm. I think the most expensive card was like Pyroblast, which was like 7 tickets. And that was for, yeah, you know, sideboard or something. Everything else, at least for the Burn deck, are generally very, very cheap.
Like, which is true in paper, too. I mean, a lot of those cards, yeah, are commons. But
the thing, yeah, is, like, right now, the most expensive card on Magic Online for the Burn deck, I think, is Eidolon of the Great Revel. Like, that's, mm-hmm, the most expensive card. And, you know, Chain Lightning, which is, in paper, a, you know, $10, $15-ish dollar card, is pennies, something like that, because it's in an intro deck that is just eternally available of, here is a stock Burn deck. You can buy it for 9 tickets or something like that. So there's, mm-hmm, just a lot of that. So that makes a lot of sense to see probably more Burn in Legacy as well.
Actually, you can pick up Chain Lightnings for 4 cents. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to pick up some Chain Lightnings for 4 cents in paper, but yes.
I just got my fourth one in paper, and it's really nice. They don't match at all. They got two in Italian, one in English, and one in the premium foily ugly, yeah, ones. So it's fine.
But even cards like, okay, so example, they often print sets that aren't released in paper. There are formats like Vintage Masters.
Right.
Things like that. Yeah, they have a lot of very high valuable cards on paper that they kind of saturate the market with to make it cheaper for people to enter these events. They don't have a Legacy Masters, but obviously they've had Vintage Masters online, which was not released in paper. And then, of course, right, all of the Modern Masters were released concurrent online with paper, right, cards.
That's the other thing I was really thought was nutty. I was looking into, you know, making a Burn deck just as a thing that I figured would be the cheapest to do. And I, you know, for my paper one that I'm putting together, I've got one Plateau dual land. And because I only own one Plateau, I've got a Sacred Foundry in there also. And that's fine. And I thought, oh, no, I'll budget this. I'll take out that Plateau. And the price went up. Because Plateaus are like $1 and Sacred Foundries are like $10 on Magic Online.
That is, yeah, pretty accurate, because Plateau has been printed in, let me count the different sets right now. It's been printed in Modern Edition 3, Modern Edition 4. They have a promo version. It was printed in Vintage Masters. You can get them for less than $1. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. And I guess, you know, I don't know exactly how many Shocklands are out there comparatively, but, you know, a lot more people need Shocklands because Modern's a pretty big thing on Magic Online, or so I'm told.
Yes, yeah, so for sure. I mean, it's a lot of people have opted to stay away until the Eldrazi menace has gone away. But even Sacred Foundries now you can pick up for 3 tickets, 4 tickets.
Hmm.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Excuse me. Well, before we move on, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor. As I said, we are sponsored by CoolStuffInc.com, which is a great website to pick up your packs, pick up your sealed deck. I know Drew and I are right now price checking for sealed Shadows Over Innistrad packs, and looks like booster boxes looks like probably the best deals on Cool Stuff. So that's really convenient for us. We do, yep, have a special sponsor though for just this episode. Now, have you ever had a friend who you're looking to get a gift for, maybe a Magic player over Christmas, and you just can't figure out what to get them? Look no further. Merit Lage Incorporated has the best surprise gift thing in the ice. What's in that ice? It's a thing. You're guaranteed to be surprised, and the person who you're giving it to will definitely be surprised. Could it be a thing? It's definitely going to be a thing. Could it be a puppy? Well, it could be a puppy. Is it going to be a land? Could be a land. Spoiler, it's actually death. Just technically death. Don't worry about it. But they won't know. Wink, wink, wink. Thing in the ice for all of your gift-giving needs.
Mm. Yes. I'll I would not. Some of those up.
I don't want a puppy in ice, and the puppy's dead or frozen.
No, these are ice puppies. It's fine.
Oh, ice puppies. Oh, you didn't clarify that for me. Okay, well then, yes.
Right. extra right. fluffy. You need your snow mitts just because they're extra icy.
Well, then obviously I want it.
Moving on, but staying vaguely on topic. Now, I think we're going to – I think we've got enough to talk about. I'd love to have you hang out for a part two episode as well. But before we go, I do want to talk about, while it's still the hot topic, some of the new Shadows Over Innistrad spoilers. I am very excited about the set. I know I really loved Innistrad. Before we move on, though, is there anything else you want to talk about leagues? Because we want to kind of get this out to the people now so that if they're interested, they can buy a deck, sign up, and play one or more leagues before this season's over.
Yeah, leagues, their seasons end just in concurrent with downtime, but they are always coming back. They always come back. Like, you're not missing anything if you don't join the league within the next few weeks or whatever. There will be more leagues for you to try out. If you've not tried Magic Online before, I wouldn't suggest jumping straight into a Legacy league and getting the cards and doing that out. I would recommend playing in like the casual room. They have rooms where you can just play with other people, that aren't necessarily as competitive as joining a tournament, mm-hmm. but they're still going to give you practice with the client itself, which is what you want before I think you go into a more competitive scene, which I would consider the leagues a more competitive scene than, you know, just a casual room where there's nothing on the line, right? People are often right. trying out brews and stuff. So I would do that first before trying these out. But hey, it's a great way to play Legacy or any other format in a convenient manner.
One nice thing that I found when I signed up is they give you a certain number of new player points that serve no purpose except to get into new player events. Just mm-hmm. these events that are very low stakes because the entry fee is these little new player points that you only get when you first sign up and that have no other purpose. They are not necessarily people who are new to Magic, who are people who aren't good, but they are only given out X number per person. So you're probably going to be using them up first when you're new to the client. And there are prizes, so people are going to be trying hard, but they're very, very small prizes. And it's really a way to kind of get used to how the interface works. Because the interface is about as intuitive as you would think mouse clicking your way through a game of Magic would be. I have definitely already lost games because I try to pass priority and say, sure, that resolves. And I accidentally say, no, I don't want to attack this turn. So that's something that I've got to try to figure out is a little bit better how to use the hotkeys and the stops and everything to tell it when I want to do things and when I want to pass priority. Because the most interesting thing and the hardest thing for me to kind of get a handle on is the timer. Since you don't have somebody, a judge there calling slow play, you can take as long as you want for anything that you're doing. But whenever it's your priority, whenever you're the one who gets to do something, there's a little timer counting down from, 25 for a match?
Yeah, right? I think that's a great point. I didn't mention that timers are a thing.
Yeah, it's almost like a chess, which I think, again, Drew knows more than I do. But, you take your turn, yes. And then you pass. And then as soon as you pass, your opponent's clock starts counting down. So a match will never take more than 50 minutes. Because, if you go almost to time and they go almost to time, that'll be 50 minutes. If either player goes to time, that player loses, regardless of how ahead they are. Just the idea that person has had their priority for more than 25 minutes. I guess on the assumption that they must have been playing slow. Is that kind of the theory?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good way to do things too. Like you can pause there for 5 minutes and think through a really critical turn if you need to. But most of the time, you're just going to be play my land, pass, because there's not much to think about.
Yeah. As a former tournament chess player, I've got to say I've always wondered why we don't have these in paper Magic, because it resolves all of the you're taking too long issues. It's just, well, you've got a clock. That's how much time you've got. That's it.
No, I used to be a competitive chess player too, and the clock is just so unfeasible for Magic. Like clicking the clock between every priority, untap, draw, click. It's
that's true.
Online, it's a lot different. It'll just do it manually for you, but.
Okay, well, and that is the big thing to be aware of. Oddly enough, that lets some decks not work online that work in paper. Like a lot of infinite combo decks don't work because if they take 10 clicks to add one mana to your mana pool, that's not really, you're going to run out of time. Because in paper, you can just say, I show it to you once and I do that a million times. Magic Online doesn't really have the capability yet to demonstrate a loop and then continue it X times. Do you think they'll ever do that? Or is that kind of just so low on their wonky, not always working right client priority list?
I'm sure it's very low, but I can definitely see it occurring eventually. I mean, people still play, well, it's not, you know, Podless Pod or Eggs Combo when that was still a thing. People still played those decks. It's just, yes, you had to know what you were doing, and you are going to use a lot more time than your opponent.
Okay. And the flip side, I saw somebody who was playing Four Horsemen. Do I think you know the deck Four Horsemen?
You'd have to refresh my memory.
Not well, no.
It is the weirdest little deck, and the details escape me and are too complicated to really go into in this side topic. But basically, it is a self-mill infinite combo where you can mill yourself one card at a time. And you have a Eldrazi in your deck so that if that goes in your graveyard, you reshuffle your graveyard. And the thing is, you need like three certain cards to be in your graveyard and two certain cards to still be in your library. And so, in theory, you can do this, mill, and if you get the three you need first, you win. If you don't, well, just keep going until you hit the Eldrazi and try again. Now, when I tell you that, you can think, oh, well, eventually I'll get there, so just do it infinite times until I get the ones I need in the graveyard. Well, in Paper Magic, it doesn't work that way, because if you ever reset the game state to exactly as it was before without having done anything, that is, by definition, slow play. And so if you do this once, you've gone from a full library to a full library with nothing else changing, slow play, disqualification, or game loss or something. Well, Magic Online, you can do it. Somebody, I think, wrote a script to just press the buttons for him really fast. And he was able to have it automatically go through this thing like 200 times in 4 minutes to get him to where he needed to be. And he was able to make it work. It's still not a great deck. Don't try to play that on Leagues. Just please don't. But the fact that somebody did it and made it work is just astounding to me. The way that the timing and slow play just are different and allow for different things to be done. Well, if there's something else about Leagues, you said how Leagues start up one after the other. Should we expect another Legacy Leagues after this?
Oh yeah, I mean, they've been rotating Leagues already. There've been multiple Modern Leagues, multiple sealed Leagues and stuff. They kind of rotate. It depends on when they have downtime. It's not that they're ending them anytime soon. It's just, you know, when they take the client down to work on it, it kind of coincides with when the Leagues fall.
Well, I guess if Legacy Leagues ends now, and after this one, should we expect it to be, you know, Pauper next and then Legacy after that and then Pauper after that? Or will they start up another Legacy one as soon as this Legacy one ends so that there's always a Legacy and always a Pauper and always a Modern?
Oh, there's always all of the Leagues up at any given time, yeah. It's not like one or the other. They're all there, always.
Okay. And one great thing, actually, just kind of touching on the how competitive is it, they have said that they want to, once Leagues kind of become more popular, have two Leagues for each format, a more competitive one, which I guess would be more top-heavy prizes, and a more casual one with more flat prizes. Just so that you can kind of get more of the experience you're looking for. I assume that the overall prize ratio would be about similar, so that neither one is cheating you, so to speak. But we'll have to see if and when that happens. But keep an eye out for that. But before we close out, I did want to talk, though, about Shadows Over Innistrad spoilers, which I know we don't quite have one ourselves yet, but you recently had a spoiler. Do you want to tell us about that? Because that was pretty cool, actually.
Sure, yeah. They're calling
it two today, right?
I did, yeah. They're calling them previews now for us, anyways. I don't think we're supposed to, I don't think I call them spoilers or anything like that. But the first one, I wrote an article on the Mothership, so over at Wizards, and that was for Gold Knight Castigator. This card, I do not think we'll be making any waves in Legacy, unfortunately. But,
no.
We might see it in some standard environments. It's a 2 red, 2 colorless, 4/9 flying haste. Okay. Double all damage that would be dealt to it, and double all damage that would be dealt to you.
Yeah. Okay.
So I really do love this, and you know, I think standard red decks could use this. I don't know enough about modern. I doubt this could find a home, but I mean, as a top end, a four power haste in the air, that doesn't sound bad. I mean, that's a lot of oomph.
I think you need more than that for modern, but I mean, it seems probably not terrible for standard. I agree.
My modern deck is a graveyard deck. It doesn't care about damage and attacking. It doesn't know what you all are doing. But it looks great for standard. And I saw some people complaining about the, you know, doubling your damage thing and how it blocks terribly. And well, first of all, I mean, it's effectively a 4/5, so it doesn't block terrible. And second of all, if you're blocking with this, something's gone terribly, terribly, terribly wrong.
You're playing red. You're not supposed to be blocking.
Yeah.
So you know, I love that card. I think it's great. The one preview that I did want to talk about, there have been two cards that I think are going to make waves in Legacy, and I wanted to see your take on it. One is Thing in the Ice. What is your take on that card?
Wow. I mean, I think the design perspective, it's awesome. In Legacy, really?
Drew and I were arguing about this for a while. He started off saying it would see zero play, and me saying it would be a top at least 20, maybe top 10 creature in Legacy. So I want to get your take on it.
Top 10? Oh my!
I think so. I think it might get top 10, top 20 for sure. I'm not really sure how high a bar you'd really want to call that, because you know I think the 20th creature is like Quirion Ranger or something, but.
I guess what is it most comparable to then? What like?
It, in my mind, it is the love child of Delver and Tarmogoyf.
Okay,
and I hear that those are both pretty good cards.
I kind of see that. I kind of see how it's like a Tarmogoyf with just a very slow Tarmogoyf. But
well, I guess my take is for anybody who doesn't know, this is 2 mana for an 0/4 defender, I think.
Yep.
And it has some counters on it. And whenever you play an instant or a sorcery, you remove a counter. And when they're all gone,
it starts with 4 counters. This is a relevant number. Yes.
Yes. So after you cast it and then cast 4 instant or sorceries, you flip it, and it turns into a
7/8
Kraken Horror.
So you get a 7/8 for 2 mana, and when it flips, you return all non-horror creatures to their owner's hands.
Right.
Which, here's my take on that. Say you play this on turn 2, like you would want to with a Goyf. You know, nobody wants to tap out on turn 2. People do it all the time. They play Goyfs. Between Force of Will, Brainstorm, Bolt, Swords Plowshares, Gitaxian Probe, I expect this thing to flip on turn 3 half the time, and flip on turn 4, I think it flip. If you build a deck around it, you throw this in a red-blue Delver deck that's already just chock full of instants and sorceries, you're going to have a lot.
You're kind of selling me on it, actually. I mean,
I don't think it'll flip on turn 3, but I do think it will flip on turn 4, and you're also getting value for all those spells you're playing.
Right.
I think it's going to be murderous against Delver decks, because it's just, like, if you're trying to play Delver, this thing is going to be so hard to deal with.
I played against, with my Elf deck, against somebody who was testing with this, and they had theirs. And, okay, maybe that's, like, the worst matchup to go against it with the creatures. But, he played one, and I kept trying to attack, and I got a few points. Okay, 2 turns later, he played another one, flipped the first one, bounced everything I had, waited 2 more turns, then bounced everything I had again, while he was attacking with 7 power. It's a 3-turn clock that removes all blockers. Oh, gosh, it's so amazing. And you know what else is a horror? Phyraxian Revoker and Spellskite.
All right.
Spellskite, yeah.
So I'm not sure if there's really like a horror tribal deck waiting to happen, but that's notable that those don't get bounced. And honestly, if you just throw it in a red-blue Delver deck where the only creatures are Delver, this, and you know maybe Young Pyromancer, yeah, it doesn't go well with Young Pyromancer, but if you draw up a Young Pyromancer, you're doing well. If you draw this, you're doing well. Play whichever one you draw and just... Now that's the one you're running with. Now you get to run 12 1 and 2 drop creatures that really like instants and sorceries and can win the game on their own.
This is definitely the type of creature that can, you know what? I'm on your side now. I think it's going to be good.
I think is going to be good. I think it will. It does not go in everything the way that Goyf does. It does not go in everything the way that Delver does. You do need to build around it. It will not be as ubiquitous as either of them. But it doesn't take much to have instants and sorceries in your deck. It survives Lightning Bolt in the meantime. Oh, gosh.
You can flip it on your opponent's turn as well.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, at end of turn, brainstorm, flip everything. Yep.
Flip it. Yeah, you can flip it at instant speed. And the nice thing... If they try to respond to it, you can actually flip it, even if it has zero counters. Like, if they do some kind of shenanigans, in response to it flipping, you can then trigger it again, I think. I'm not really sure exactly how it works now with the new rules.
It will then flip a second time, and you'll be back to Thing in the Ice, but then you can flip it a third time.
No, they changed the rules. It never flips back again.
No? Okay.
No, they did a new change on the flipping rules that just basically to... stop those kinds of shenanigans.
I need to learn this since we're apparently going back to Innistrad and I need to be playing with flip cards.
If you have a flip card, you can activate a flip me ability as many times as you want on the stack on top of each other. But if it flips, it will not flip again until the stack is empty.
Ah, gotcha. Because there was a card back in original Innistrad called Thraven Sentry where if multiple creatures died, you could accidentally flip it back from a 5/4 trample to a 2/2.
Yep. And there was the scholar, the Jekyll and Hyde guy, and there was a way that you could get him to flip back and forth for fun and profit as well.
Right, because he was a looter and he was better on his non-flipped side in a lot of decks, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason why, because I was asking, you know, why they would have really done this, because it seems a very nuanced rule that maybe has some benefit but is complicated. The new Avacyn card, which we don't need to go into all the spoilers, but the new Avacyn card, when it flips, it deals 3 damage to all creatures. And it flips. The trigger is that if one of your creatures dies, she flips at end of turn. So if you have 10 of your creatures, if you have 10 of your creatures die, I think the way it's worded, it would try to flip 10 times and just deal 30 damage to everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 15 anyway, because half the flips wouldn't deal damage. But right, yes, yes, that is the way it would work, and that would be. Yeah, that would be a problem.
That's awesome.
It makes me happy just to think about it. I'm only partially sure. I didn't think about it too hard since it cannot work that way anymore. But
right.
Anyway, I digress. There are actually other spoilers I want to get to, but we'll save those for next episode since we are running out of time. Why don't you tell us how people can reach you?
Sure. The main way they can reach me is via my Twitch stream, twitch.tv/NumotTheNummy. NumotTheNummy. I stream there basically every weekday, sometimes on the weekends. You can also reach me on Twitter, same thing, NumotTheNummy. And I recently just launched a new website, NumotGaming.com. Yeah, lots of big things in the works, but those are the three easiest ways to catch me.
Yeah, and we will throw links to all those down in the show notes below. And you know how to reach us. We'll talk on episode 2. We don't need to waste more time on us. But, Drew, do you have a banned card of the day?
I do have a banned card of the day.
Good.
In honor of Kenji's presence in our Magic Online episode, my banned card of the day is one that, as far as I know, has not been printed, and I cannot imagine ever being printed on Magic Online.
Shahrazad.
Better than that, we got Chaos Orb.
That is better.
Chaos Orb is an artifact for 2 mana and 1 mana. You flip Chaos Orb, flip the physical card from a height of at least a foot over the table. It must turn over at least once, and then when it lands, it destroys all permanents that it has landed on, and then you sacrifice Chaos Orb. Not going to really work online, and they decided they didn't really want to do any cards that did stuff like this. No flipping of physical cards on the table.
There are some great stories behind this card. One is true, and is that people would like tape their cards to the walls or spread them out on 4 different tables. Because the whole idea is that if you were to aim it just right, maybe you'd hit like 5 of your opponent's cards, like hitting a corner here and there and kill everything. So, okay, just I'll spread everything out so you can't do that. The one that's probably not true, but is a great story, is that somebody took his paid it, sacrificed it, and then ripped it up into little pieces and just threw the pieces at his opponent.
There's an unglued or unhinged card that that makes fun of this, or you, where you do tear it into pieces and throw it onto the table. But
yeah, this card is legal in only one format, and that is 93-94. They let this card be played there. I think, though, they have a special rule because the gather rules say that once this card is played, you can't rearrange your cards anymore on the table or something like that. I think they've said it can only ever kill one card. Just to, all right, fine, you've spread them all out, we believe you, kind of thing, so that people don't get all weird and crazy about it.
Taping stuff to the walls, yeah. The other thing I heard about this was there's a card that makes token copies of artifacts, and the goal was, like, in a casual game, obviously, this is the formats in which this is banned include commanders, so you can't even do it here, but you would make token copies of this, and you would use a pillow to represent the token, and you would flip a pillow onto the table. So, I blew up everything. Chaos Orb is a silly card.
I will use this large deep dish pizza as a copy of Chaos.
Ah! My Black Lotus.
It's a red saucy lotus now.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kenji. And if you are still available, stick around. We will be back next week. Maybe 2 weeks. Maybe 1 week. We'll see how quick we can get these episodes up. And talk to you more then.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh, and for everybody else in the audience, thank you for listening. And remember, until next time, preparation is the best legacy weapon. Thanks. Preparation is the best legacy weapon.
Except for Chaos Orb.